Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan, Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Wednesday, December 18, 2024. Cholera is killing residents of Unity State as health officials struggle to fight new cases.
And we have 40 deaths, people that died from the cholera disease. There were 40 yesterday, but the update for today is not yet released.
And the governor of Jonglei State has suspended his finance minister.
I suspended the current director general, and on the next day, then the governor went and canceled and reversed my suspension of the director general. And in the afternoon, yesterday on the 17th, he came with a suspension.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Officials in Unity State say the number of people dying from cholera infections is increasing daily. Unity State Director General in the Ministry of Health says 40 people died from the disease by Tuesday this week. John Mootball says his office is waiting for help from the National Health Ministry in Juba. He says other health partners should also respond to the health emergency in Unity State.
And the Ministry of Health and the partners in Unity State are trying their level best to reduce the spread of the disease. But the issue is the preventive measures are not being followed by the people living around the POC and the people living in Rukona and also other parts of Unity State, simply because of the environment that the people are living in is exposing the population more to risk of infection, cholera infection.
Talk to me about the numbers of people who have succumbed to the disease so far.
As of yesterday, we have a cumulative cases of 2,280 cases for cholera, and we have 40 deaths, people that died from the cholera disease. There were 40 yesterday, but the update for today is not yet released because it used to be released. It used to be released in the evening hours. Later in the evening at 7, then there will be the update for today.
And
currently, as we are talking,
yes,
we are trying our level best on the awareness part. We are disseminating the information on how people should prevent the spread of the disease by actually washing their hands using soaps. And then by not going, to defecate outside or using open defecation, because these are the risk factors for the spread of the disease in the community. And but still, as we are going from door to door, aware people on how they could prevent the disease or curb or mitigate the transmission. And the only thing that we are now facing, and that could be the only solution that could reduce the spread of the transmission of disease or reduce the mortality rate of the population from the cholera disease, is to allocate the vaccines, the OCVs, the oral cholera vaccines, to the United States. This will be the only way to reduce the spread of the disease. Otherwise, we will moving around, trying to treat, but still the cases will be increasing daily.
Yes, yes.
But when these vaccines are being allocated, as we are trying hard with the National Ministry of Health to allocate some OCVs to Yemsi State.
I was going to ask you
yeah,
because you sound like you're,
yes,
helpless. Nobody's coming to your help.
Yes,
nobody's,
yes.
Nobody's providing,
yes,
help.
Yes.
What is the National Ministry of,
yes,
Health and other partners like World Health Organization doing to arrest the situation? Because 30 people dying from cholera is quite alarming.
Yeah, and this study and this 30 people are the reports for today. I mean, for yesterday. We don't know for today how many people will die from cholera, and that's why I'm appealing to the National Ministry of Health. I went and met the Undersecretary yesterday, and I informed her about the situation on the ground. And then I told her that the only relief that would be possible to actually mitigate or reduce the cholera crisis in Unity State now is to allocate for us the OCVs. So this will be the only thing that will reduce the spread of infection.
What is the response from the National Ministry of Health? Because people are dying from cholera and they are delaying dispatching help to you in Unity State where you are facing crisis. What is the response from the National Ministry of Health?
Yeah, actually, I met the Undersecretary yesterday and there was no clear answer to the request pertaining the allocation of the OCVs in Unity State. She just told me that I will meet with my team and we will prioritize it and we will consider it. As for now, there is no any clear answer for the request that I talked about with the Undersecretary, National Minister of Health. So that's what I can tell you. She didn't tell me the timeline that they will take for the OCVs to be released, and she didn't tell me when they are able to have their meeting concerning the allocation of OCVs to Unity State. So that was the ground actually of our meeting yesterday. I didn't come out with a good response, but I can term it as good response because she just said I will prioritize it. But I don't know when they will locate the OCVs. As long as I put it into our attention, so I will just be waiting for the feedback.
That's John Mootball, Unity State Director General in the Ministry of Health. He spoke with me from the Unity State capital, Bantu. The governor of South Sudan's Jonglei State has suspended the Minister of Finance following a second impeachment vote in the State Legislative Assembly. The suspended finance minister denies any wrongdoing. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Bor.
Majub Bialtruk, the governor of Jonglei State, suspended the State Minister of Finance, Abraham Yuek, Tuesday, saying he has no power to overturn the decision of the state lawmakers.
The minister was impeached by parliament, and then I came to confirm it only. Okay. He was impeached by parliament, simply like that. I mean, the parliament have a right, if he impeached somebody, the governor doesn't have a right to say it. I will refuse that one.
Some Jonglei State lawmakers say the governor's decisions was long overdue. Amir Ateng, a speaker of the Jonglei State Legislative Assembly, says the finance minister was impeached by the assembly in 2022 for what she calls gross misappropriation of non-oil revenues collected in the state. The assembly then impeached him a second time this week when they reminded the governor.
Our work is to monitor the executive. There are a lot of issues in the Ministry of Finance. There is a corruption. In 2022, we summoned the Minister of Finance to report on the revenue collected in the state. We have a good revenue collection in the state, but the minister failed to report how much the state is collecting.
The Norway-based U4 Anti-Corruption Center says graft has been a pervasive problem in South Sudan since its independence from Sudan in 2011. Transparency International's Corruption Perception Index ranks the country as being among those with the highest level of perceived public sector corruption in the world. Yuek, the suspended finance minister, denies any wrongdoing. He says the governor used the impeachment process to punish him for changes he made in the ministry staffing.
I was doing my job as it was stipulated by the law.
I was not acting out of my duties. My suspension is totally retaliation because I suspended the current director general. I suspended the current director general, and on the next day, then the governor went and canceled and reversed my suspension of the director general. And in the afternoon, yesterday on the 17th, he came with a suspension.
In March, the United States State Department imposed visa restriction on several individuals in South Sudan for undermining or impeding a sustainable peace by engaging in corruption that fuels conflict in South Sudan. South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makui has acknowledged on several occasions that corruption exists in South Sudan, adding that his country is not the only corrupt state on earth. The state governor did not say for how long the finance minister will remain under suspension. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayor, reporting from Bor.
From Bor, we move to Reng administrative area, where communities in the area accuse their chief administrator of infringement on their rights. Gao community says the chief administrator has denied their 40% of oil revenue share. Some young men and women who staged protests in Reng town allege that most of them are arrested while others are in hiding. Mamer Abraham Kwart has more on that situation from Malakal.
Riang Thon is the Gao community leader in Reng administrative area. He says residents want the 40% share of revenue collected from soil from the area used for construction of roads. He says Jipok, an oil company, buys maram from the community for constructing roads. Maram is a type of red gravelly soil that is used to build roads and make bricks in East Africa and other parts of the world. Don alleges the chief administrator diverted revenue into his personal accounts.
We have a case with the government of Ruing's chief administrator, Advocate Tiokming Luak, does not want to give us our 40% of maram, which is share of the community in Jiao County. Government of Ruing has 60% and the community has 40%. He does not want to give us our 40% as the community. Almost $2 million he has deposited into his account and sent it to his own businesses.
After the conflict in 2016, South Sudan adopted 32 states. Ruang became a state, but in 2020, the government returned to 10 states and merged Pariang and Abiamnom counties and called them Ruang Administrative Area. The Ruang government agreed to sell maram to Jipok in Jiao County, allotting 40% of the revenue to the community, while the government takes 60%. Young men and women from Pariang, the capital of Ruang administrative area, protested against what they called corruption and poor leadership of the Ruang chief administrator, Tiokmoin Luak, on December 9, 2024. Mwen Kwergum, resident of Ruang, says there is insecurity since the current chief administrator was appointed.
People do not want to protest, but the government of Ruang does not go well with the community because the security is not stable. Secondly, we understand that nepotism is common in South Sudan. The former administrator was Wiao Malik Diran. The current chief administrator is his uncle. The community has not been happy with this.
Simon Chol Mialet, Ruang Administrative Areas Minister for Information, says the protest over the maram sale is politically motivated to paint a bad picture of chief administrator.
For the case of the maram, of course, there's a case in the court between the government and the Dao community. This case went to the court simply because it was also politically motivated. The government accepted to pay. And of course, this wasn't the current government. It was inherited from the former government.
The information minister dismisses claims of insecurity in the area. He says the existing issues relate to cattle rustling and can be contained. Ruang administrative area is one of the oil-producing areas in South Sudan. However, the people of Ruang say they do not have clean water and health issues related to oil pollution are prevalent. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwart, reporting from the Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Today marks the International Migrants Day. Find out how people who migrated from their home countries are making changes around the world.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. And our words of wisdom comes today from a listener who says he's from Juba.
This is me, Davido, from Juba. I want to speak to you my proverb in our language that Ngola gadokona na mugun, dokonda lokpolo dokona na mugun, dokonda loro lo dokona na mugun. This means in English that what you do good, you are doing it for yourself. But what you do wrong, you do it for yourself. So this is what I have said in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. As the world marks International Migrants Day on December 18, the United Nations is urging leaders and citizens to celebrate the contributions that millions of migrants make to communities and economies around the world. In Kenya, the International Organization for Migration organized a 2-kilometer walk in Nairobi to raise awareness about migration issues and advocate for migrants' rights. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Atak Duang, a 21-year-old South Sudanese, fled fighting in Khartoum, Sudan, to seek refuge in Kenya.
As a member of the migrant community in Kenya, this day is quite tremendous unto us. It brings us all together as migrants. We get a chance to meet, interact, and at least have some eventful activities to be able to live together as migrants. The day, as commemorated, it puts a sense across us that we are here to build ourselves together in as much as we come from different backgrounds and areas, and we live together as one.
He spoke as he took part in the Step Up for Safe Migration event in Nairobi this week to mark International Migrants Day. The day is meant to not only remind the world of the economic and social benefits migrants can bring to new communities, but also the challenges they face, including discrimination and violence. The United Nations says conflicts, climate-related disasters, and economic pressures drive millions of people from their homes in search of safety or opportunity. Sharon Dimanche is the chief of mission at the International Organization for Migration in Kenya.
To recognize the fact that migrants make a lot of contributions to our own lives. I know in Kenya how we have so many migrants coming in, and we all recognize the contributions of Kenyans. But in most cases, we tend not to pay attention to the contributions, the skills, the knowledge, the innovation that migrants bring in. So the celebration today, it is intended for us to recognize and remember the contributions by all the migrants.
The International Labour Organization this week issued a report saying migrants usually bring a net economic benefit to the countries they enter and those they left. ILO officials in Geneva said Monday that migrants drive economic growth in destination countries and they support home countries through their remittances. They also say migrants typically fill low-wage jobs that citizens in some countries shun. However, citizens and governments in host countries do have concerns about helping thousands of newcomers, and many fear migrants are competing with citizens for resources like food, water, housing and medical services. John Borogu is the Commissioner for Refugee Affairs in Kenya.
It is for the top leadership to be able to decide, now we cannot take any more because we are experiencing more pressure in terms of resources, in terms of security, or they pose a threat of some kind. If we get to that situation, then the country will have to take a decision. In 2016, when the country felt there was a threat to its national interest, the then administration decided, through a tripartite understanding, UNHCR, Somalia and Kenya, to repatriate.
Kenya is an important destination for migrants. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says the East African nation hosts about 750,000 refugees who have fled war and conflict from neighboring countries such as Somalia, South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Burundi. Ambassador Julius Bitok is Kenya's principal secretary at the State Department for Immigration and Citizen Services.
We are doing this celebration in a very special way, ensuring that we make every step to support the migration agenda. Migration is really very, very critical to our nation because clearly many nations have been made by migration, including our country. Migration goes with many things. It goes with talent, it goes with culture, it goes with diversity, and the government of Kenya is really committed to ensuring that we have safe and orderly migration.
Celebrated annually, International Migrants Day provides an opportunity to shine a spotlight on the contributions of millions of migrants around the world. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Still in Nairobi, a Kenyan aid group is helping refugees improve their lives by providing affordable loans that will help finance their businesses. At least 13,000 refugees in exile have received loans. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi.
Adele Mubalama, a tailor at Kenya's Kakuma refugee camp, fled her home in the Democratic Republic of Congo in 2019. Mubalama says she abandoned her business selling clothing and her efforts to get funds to begin a new trade in exile was futile. She says if you want to borrow money from the bank, they would ask you for statements and the Kenya Revenue Authority PIN number, which is very difficult for refugees to get. She says her dream came alive when she was granted a loan from Inhomoko, an organization that helps to empower micro and small business entrepreneurs, including refugees in Africa. She now makes bags and sells fabrics in Kakuma. She says they assessed me, then put me in training about running business. When I completed the training, she says they gave me the first loan of 30,000 Kenya shillings, which I used to start my business. At least 13,000 refugees in Kenya have received loans from Inkomoko, which means origin in Nyarwanda. But according to a 2024 World Bank report, despite the significant progress Kenya has made in developing a policy framework for refugees and host communities, refugees continue to face challenges in accessing services to improve their lives. Inhomoko founder Julian Oila says entrepreneurs can access up to $50,000 and pay back at an interest rate of 10% annually, lower than what most banks charge, and without collateral. Oila says that with the loans, many refugees see their skills and talents revived.
The system that was established to support refugees is completely outdated. Humanitarian funding is declining rapidly, while the number of displaced people is increasing. What we see is that the old way of working isn't working. It's when we bring private sector solutions into these refugee communities that we actually start to see economic development.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, UNHCR, reported that at the end of June 2024, 122.6 million people worldwide remained forcibly displaced due to disasters, persecution, conflicts, violence, and human rights violations, among others. This represents an increase of 5% or 5.3 million people compared to the end of 2023. International Organization of Migrants Senior Program Manager Pravina Gorong told VOA that climate-induced disasters are adding to the growing numbers of displaced individuals and are destroying livelihoods.
So when the people are on the move for safety and better livelihood opportunities, there's a risk of exploitation. And also without documentation, they cannot access any kind of services, including financial services. And also they can't access any type of assistance that is in existence.
Kenya hosts over 1 million international migrants, according to IOM, and nearly 800,000 registered refugees. Officials believe initiatives to help them access affordable financing will help improve their lives. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
A bipartisan effort to protect children from harms of social media is running out of time in this session of the U.S. Congress. If passed, the Kids Online Safety Act would institute safeguards for minor personal data online. But free speech advocates and some Republicans are concerned the bill could lead to censorship. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
Social media is again under the spotlight on Capitol Hill. With just days left in this year's session, both Republican and Democratic Party senators are urging the House of Representatives to pass the Kids Online Safety Act. Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn.
We have laws in the physical space that protect children from the harms of alcohol, tobacco, firearms, protect them from cyberbullying, protect them from exposure to sexual exploitation or pornography. In the virtual space, we do not have those laws.
Blackburn is co-sponsor of the bill, the first legislation since 1998 that would provide online protections for minors. But House Speaker Mike Johnson, a Republican, says he's concerned the measure would limit free speech.
I think all of us, 100% of us, support the principle behind it. But you got to get this one right. When you're dealing with the regulation of free speech, you can't go too far and have it be overbroad.
And conservative groups seeking to limit the powers of government agree. Richard Manning is the president of Americans for Limited Government.
I don't trust government officials to arbitrate fairly, because they by design are political. And we've seen what happens when political people weaponize speech. And that is dangerous and it needs to be stopped. So we've got to come up with a better way of enforcing this or put some more guardrails in the enforcement.
Elon Musk, the owner of social media platform X, worked with lawmakers to address concerns about the legislation. Democratic co-sponsor Richard Blumenthal said earlier this month,
what we've clarified is that there's no censorship in this bill. There's no content moderation. There's no blocking of specific content. It is about choice, giving young people choice and their parents safeguards, tools to protect their children.
Tech companies Meta and Google oppose the bill. President-elect Donald Trump has not expressed an opinion on the issue, but his son, Donald Trump Jr., posted to X saying, quote, "We can protect free speech and our kids at the same time." Manning says the legislation being considered would not work in practice.
State attorney generals would have an opportunity to take whatever the guidelines were, the regulations put in place by the FTC. They would be able to then use those guidelines to determine speech within the context of their state. And you would eventually have 50 different internets in 50 different states.
An earlier version of the bill passed the Senate by a vote of 91-3. Supporters are encouraging the House to vote on the legislation before the end of the year. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
That's all we prepared for you for this Wednesday, December 18, 2024. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Bob Bass, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.